Hey there, you're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast.
Do you have a name?
Oh, shit. Do you want me to do it again, or should we just keep it bad?
Let's just keep it bad.
Oh.
Name?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm Charlie Carver.
Cool, all right.
Yeah, fuck you, Teen Wolf podcast people.
All right. I love you.
I love you so much.
Everyone, welcome to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. This is episode 151, and we're actually doing another back-to-back episode of two Teen Wolf episodes. That's saying episode a lot of times. That aired this week, 18 and 19 of season 6. So the one more to go with the finale, but this week's air date had two scheduled on it for, I don't know, reasons probably that come down to, once again, they shot this with another air date in mind and have had to jam it into this period for, I don't know, reasons. But we've got two episodes, 18 and 19, Genotype and Broken Glass. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. And then next week will be the big finish. So, okay, Karen's making a growly noise. Okay, so if you want to get in touch with us and talk about what's been going on before the finale, you can reach us on our Twitter, which is NATW Podcast. Our Instagram, Facebook, and email address are all also NATW Podcast, so emails natwpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can reach out on our Tumblr, notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com, or on hyperball.com, where we host this podcast as well. So, two episodes, we're going to go through one at a time and, talk about what's occurred in up and where we've set up the show to go in the finale, basically. So as I was saying to Karen before we started, my memory of these two episodes got really bundled up. They all sort of sped, it kind of all got mixed up together. So I have a favorite quote, but it's not from this episode, and I didn't piece out which one was from which. So, Karen, what was your favorite quote from this episode?
Mine was when Malia and Lydia were in the hospital and they stuck Helwyn in the MRI machine, and she's talking about how they're going to get the bullet out of his brain, and she says it's going to be messy. Lydia does, and Malia just says, "I've seen messy. Go for it." And this wasn't necessarily a funny line, but I just really liked it because Malia is a total badass. And she has seen a lot of shit in her days, and nothing really scares her that much. We see it a couple of times when she gets scared or sad or something like that, but it's not a common occurrence. So I just love how tough she is.
There's a lot of aspects of this episode that had me pretty confused, actually. So I'm keen to get into that. And there are some quotes that we've mentioned in the transcript of the episode, like that we'll actually talk about at the time that I was quite interested in, but I wasn't sure whether we were doing one quote from the whole episode or each episode. Anyway, I watched this at work and they all got very jumbled up together. So apologies. We'll go into more for the next episode.
I feel like these two episodes are just building up to the finale. So not that they weren't full of useful information or like, it's not like nothing happened because quite a bit happened, but a lot of it was like Scott and Malia training montage and kind of getting to the point where you're gathering information in order to finally defeat the bad guys. And I was just like, okay, just get me to the finale, even though I don't want to get to the finale because I'm going to cry. But I just kind of wanted it to get moving. So I think that's understandable that it kind of got jumbled because it was a little slow for me. And, not that I disliked the episodes, but I was kind of hoping for a little more oomph in some of them. But let's start with 618 Genotype. And this episode kicks off, and I agree with you, actually. There were a couple aspects that I was pretty confused about. And this cold open was like, what is actually going on here? Because it kind of just jumps you right into the middle of it. Basically, they found a phone on the primal, one of the primal pack members. And it was the one that they were pretty sure became the other half of the Inukite. And they're listening to a voicemail of a woman who sounds really worried, wants somebody to call her back. And she says something along the lines of, she'll get answers either way because it's her pack too. So she's obviously a member of the primal pack. And they're kind of asking themselves, let's see, Scott, Liam, Mason, and Theo are all there. So Mason's fine. They kind of didn't really talk about the fact that he was injured or anything like that, but he's fine now. And they're saying, you know, she could be the other half of the Inukite. And I was just like, how does that make sense? Why?
Do you mean the person on the phone or the body? Like the person on the phone is the person calling the body in the woods, right?
I assumed they were talking about the person on the phone. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense. But they had already discussed the fact that the body was probably the other half of the Inukite. So I don't know. Maybe I just got my wires crossed, or maybe they were restating something that I already knew was fact, which is why I was getting confused. But either way, Theo is the one that suggests that they go after Aaron because they know who he is. They know what he looks like.
It's like if the big job is keeping them apart, how about you go after the one that you're 100% sure of and stop him from, you know, whatever it is that he is going to do, like to murder the other one. Yeah. Sure.
And another favorite quote came from this scene because Theo kind of goes, is everyone completely shocked that I might be right? And Mason goes, no, we just don't like it.
I'm not happy with this attitude again towards Theo. Like we talked about it last week and it continued hardcore this week with Mason. And I understand that, yes, Theo did a lot of stuff. And in television land, it's kind of easy to just like, oh, yeah, that was last season he was evil. He's not evil anymore. I understand, like, real people hold grudges and stuff like that. But I still don't understand what they think Theo gains from doing this, you know? Like, Theo is actually in it for real. Mm-hmm. And that's discussed later on. And I don't understand why people are so, like, doubtful of this at this time when the issue is clearly bigger than all of them.
Right, and it basically comes down to the fact if Theo didn't want to help, if he genuinely didn't want to be a part of this, he would have run away. But he's still there, which means he's putting his life on the line. And by doing that, yeah, you can't necessarily forgive him of everything that he's done, but I think it's pretty apparent that either way, he's got the same goal as everybody else and that he just wants to defeat this thing and survive and save a lot of people's lives.
Yeah.
So it was kind of frustrating to me too. But either way, Theo was right and he did have a good idea and Mason did agree with him, which is why Theo and Mason are going to go after Aaron and Liam and Scott will track the woman from the voicemail. So it kind of kicks off with Mason and Theo first. And they go down to the tunnels where the faceless was last seen. And I guess they never checked to see the body after Parrish burned it, but which was kind of confusing to me because, I don't know, I assumed that the body was gone. Did we see it drop to the floor or did it just
I don't understand how many bodies this thing has. Like, is it just that it kind of, it leaves like an empty shell, like a carcass behind and then goes into another one? Or is it like a hallucination all the way?
I think some are hallucinations and some are physical beings. But yeah, I'm not sure how many there are either. It's kind of hard to track.
Yeah, I haven't really followed, like, okay, so it's in person A, person B, like, because it's gone in and out of Aaron, like, you know, it left Aaron and then it developed a new Aaron, which is the real, like, flesh that once was Aaron, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's a good question, because since it went back into the body, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. It is a little confusing.
I need like a mind map. I don't know.
A flow chart.
Yeah.
Well, either way, they're down in the tunnels and they feel the fear so that they know that they're close, which is actually pretty smart. And it's this whole, giving into the fear, accepting that you're afraid, but not letting that stop you kind of thing. And Mason is the one who's like, okay, which tunnel do we go down, nice and bright or dark and spooky? And of course, he tries to go down the nice and bright one. And Theo kind of says, no, we got to go down dark and spooky. Mason is not happy about it. And I was just like, man, I feel you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is sort of where they get into it with Theo. And Theo says, look, maybe I want to be a part of the pack. And Mason says the pack's about a trust and nobody trusts Theo. And he says all Theo does is look out for himself. And we get this moment that I wasn't sure what the exact motivation here was, because Aaron kind of pops out of nowhere and comes in swinging. And Theo tackles Mason and saves him from getting hurt by Aaron. But right before this, Theo and Mason, the fear was really getting to them. And Theo started to shift a little bit. And I couldn't tell, was Theo actually trying to attack Mason, which is absolutely how they initially set it up to look like? Or was he getting ready to shift because he could tell Aaron was nearby and then, you know, he tackled Mason to get him out of the way.
I definitely took it as the second, or that basically that, yeah, that moment was meant, you know, oh, Mason. I took that moment as meant to be like showing Mason up, if you know what I mean. Like, as in like, you know, oh, he thought Theo was going to attack him, but Theo was actually saving him. I don't know how much like rage there was in there or fear that was going to come out in an actual argument between them. I definitely took it as that typical, like, for a split second, someone thinks the person's attacked them, but they've actually just knocked them out the way of the real bad guy, right. Which, yeah.
That would be my hope, definitely. But there is another interesting side of this, because a little bit later when Mason is injured, Theo tries to take his pain from him, and Mason tells him, you can't take pain if you don't care. And I think that's really interesting, because even though Theo has come a long way, I don't think he necessarily trusts the other people either. And I think that's kind of keeping himself alive, because he knows they don't trust him, so he's got to be careful. And while I think he cares on kind of a surface level, he's so jaded that I'm not sure he deeply cares for anyone in that pack.
Or knows how to tap into it, at least.
True.
Like, you know, he does things on instinct, and maybe he doesn't quite know why. Like, he doesn't have this, like, self-exploration of, you know, love or care or whatever.
Yeah.
But that, like, you know, he's not just going through the motions. He is acting on some instinct, but it's not, like, very finely tuned.
And I just feel like this moment is going to come full circle, that at some point, and I mean, we've only got, because it doesn't happen in the next episode, we've only got the finale now, that Theo's going to tap into that at some point, or at least I hope he does, because his character kind of has to come to a head. And I think either, you know, he's going to die and sacrifice himself, or he's going to maybe save somebody the pain of their own death or something. And it's going to show, like, hey, he's actually here for the pack, not just for his own survival.
Who do you think Theo cares about the most in the group?
Scott.
Yeah?
I think he really respects Scott, even if he thinks he's an idiot sometimes. I think Theo wishes he were more like Scott, but he's not, and he kind of leans into that, which is fine, but I think he really does appreciate the way that Scott is constantly optimistic and is constantly kind of coming out as the winning hero, because Theo hasn't felt that very often, but I think he wants that. And remember, he wanted a pack himself. And the idea that Scott has a pack that's so devoted to him, I think is something that Theo really kind of looks up to.
Yeah.
So speaking of Scott and Liam, they head to the school because they realize that the person might be a student at the school because they get another phone call from the high school and they're like, okay, this is a good place to start.
The phone, so the person's phone gets a call from the high school.
Yes.
Or there's a missed call or a historic, you know, history of calls to that number.
Mm-hmm. And they call back and they answer, you know, Beacon yeah. Hills High School kind of thing.
Yeah.
So pretty quickly, this kind of jogs Liam's memory and he listens to the voicemail again and we get this funny montage of the science teacher yelling at Liam, and that's when Liam puts two and two together and realizes the voice on the voicemail is actually the science teacher, Mrs. Finch. And so they go back to the school. Liam shows up at the school, which is kind of big in and of itself. Nobody was really expecting him to show back up, and sits down in Mrs. Finch's class. And they start trying to work out whether or not she's a supernatural creature.
So this whole part where they had the little, you know, moment of Scott and Liam, you know, talking from across the school because they can hear each other and stuff like that. So they try a few things to expose Ms. Finch. And I'm not sure why they needed to expose her. I'm not sure why they can't just be like, so this phone, right? But what I found most interesting about this is actually that when they first did the sound like receptor, you know, those whatever the dog whistle sound receptor thing, that the other girl runs out of the class covering her ear, like that she's clearly a werewolf.
Yeah.
And that if there are that many people in the school that are actually also werewolves, like, you know, all the people that we've seen, Edgar and all the people in the meat locker and all of the people that were werewolves, have they just been like overhearing all of these conversations that Scott and Liam, like it's funny because Scott, and you know, Scott thinks that his group is the big secret. What if everyone else is like, oh my God, that's Scott McCall. He thinks like that he's the only big secret here. And like that everyone knows that about him and stuff like that. And that being said, it also kind of, the fact that this Miss Finch does end up getting exposed and that she's an alpha and stuff actually sat really funnily to me because, you know, Scott is kind of an inheritor of the Hale pack. You know, he's not a Hale, but he kind of inherited that line. And that line apparently always had the task of, you know, like protecting Beacon Hills from issues and stuff like that, and we see some of that addressed in the next episode. But it brings us right back to the first question about, like, what you'd do if you got the bite or what you'd do if you were supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the amount of supernatural beings there are in this town who do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That's really striking me for some reason. Like, look at the, like, that Scott is, you know, out there, like, doing all of these things, like fighting the good fight or whatever, and that everyone else is happy to totally be aware of it but be complacent.
You know what? Honestly, that doesn't sit strangely with me. I kind of liken it to being a police officer. You know, everyone is capable of being a police officer. Some people don't want to. Some people might actually be incapable of doing it. There's very few people who actually take that step and become a police officer because they care that much about protecting their city and their family and their friends and that sort of thing. So the idea that there's a bunch of supernatural creatures who are like, nah, like this, I just want to go to school. And like, yeah, sometimes it's cool that I can like run really fast, but I'm just not into the hero thing. So, well, it's unfortunate and it's kind of sad in my mind because I would like to think as the resident Gryffindor that I would be, you know, in Scott McCall's pack. Not everybody works that way. So it's kind of fair.
Yeah, it's just interesting that like all of these people would, I guess, like sit by, or that Scott hasn't been able to tell for the whole time and all of that kind of stuff. And then we do actually get this woman, Miss Finch, you know, eventually being confronted by the boys.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was actually hoping for didn't play out. I was kind of because she wasn't affected by the sound issue and she wasn't affected by the wolfsbane powder on the eraser. But I was kind of hoping that she was going to be a human, like that she was going to be like the mother or the, you know, mother of someone who was a werewolf or the wife of someone who was a werewolf, whatever, but that like it wasn't working because yes, she was in the pack, but she wasn't actually supernatural.
Right.
But that's actually not what played out. But yeah. I thought that's where it was going. And that would have been interesting to me because that's like a, you know, a kind of a strange circumstance to be in. And again, revisiting the Hale history in that that family was not all werewolves, like the born werewolves, like not everyone was actually a werewolf. So
yeah. I definitely thought it was going to be heading in that human direction as well, but I'm actually glad that it played out in a different sort of way. And we can talk about that when it actually comes up. But yeah, I mean, the emitter didn't work on her. The wolfsbane just made her sneeze. Like, clearly, knowing now that she's an alpha, like, she's pretty strong to be able to resist that sort of thing. And but she does notice. She actually is aware of what wolfsbane is and kind of calls Liam. She dismisses class, calls Liam forward, and admits, like, she should have protected him when he got beat up, which I was really glad that they revisited that because, yeah, as you guys know, it did not sit well with me.
Yeah, she definitely, like, kind of had that moment when she apologized to him of being like, I don't know what came over me. Like, it definitely vibed like that she was really affected by that, you know, that thing. Or maybe it was just that she was now we look back and we're like, we're aware of what she was and that she probably knew what Liam was and that she was just that much into, like, the self-preservation and not getting, you know, caught herself. So
yeah, but you know, she does deny being a werewolf time and time again. Scott brings in the phone and it clearly triggers something, and she does admit, like, you know, that's her voice, and she kind of starts asking them where they found it and everything, but she keeps denying she knows anything about the pack, and she keeps saying she's worried about her daughter, and we find out that her daughter is actually Quinn. Did this take you by surprise?
A bit. Mainly, I'm confused about whether the Quinn we met was already the Inukite or not.
That is a good question. I don't think so, because if she had been, I think she would have taken those hunters out with her powers.
Yeah. And then what basically, you know, we didn't get too much about what happened there. Is it like Miss Finch is trying to be normal and the rest of them had gone and run away? Like, like she doesn't seem very primal. Like, if that's right, what the pack is.
Which
is it, like, of rebellion?
It kind of confused me as well, because she's clearly the alpha. So you would think as the alpha of the pack, she would lean the heaviest into being more primal, except she's not. Maybe she's the link between humanity and being primal, and as the alpha, she feels it's her responsibility to sort of know what's going on in society in case they need to be aware of that sort of thing. But yeah, I thought it was really interesting, being the alpha, that she was a teacher at the school.
Yeah.
So I was not very surprised that Quinn ended up being her daughter. I don't know what it was. It just seemed obvious to me before they revealed it, but I think it was a really cool reveal anyway, and kind of, like, I really like the actress who plays Quinn. I think she does a great job, and we see her in a little bit in this scene because Finch actually attacks the boys so that they don't hurt her daughter, and then, of course, you know, she's being stupid thinking her daughter's still her daughter when it's not. And Quinn attacks her mother and severely injures her.
Yeah.
So down in the tunnels, Theo and Aaron are kind of still going at it. And Theo attacks Aaron and Quinn can feel it. And this kind of occurs to Aaron. So Aaron makes Theo attack him so that he can pinpoint where his other half is. And all the while Mason's like, no, don't do it. Don't do it. Like, he's clearly figured out what's going on, but it's a little too late, and Aaron does make Theo attack him, so he finds his other half, and we see Quinn and Aaron in the library come together, and Liam is there to kind of witness that, and he keeps telling himself this mantra, like, stay afraid, stay afraid. Again, not to run away from the fear, but kind of embrace it, and I think that's really interesting. And I really liked the exchange between Scott and Liam just moments before, where Scott puts a lot of trust in Liam. Not saying I necessarily agree with it, because having Liam go after Quinn on his own was...
I was like, really? Like,
yeah, kind of like, stupid.
Yeah, I definitely was like, no.
I would have been surprised. I would have been less surprised if Scott had been the one to go after Quinn and Liam stay with the teacher.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And get her to transform. But either way, this is how it plays out. And so Aaron and Quinn kiss, and they kind of exchange spiders, as you do. And then they fight. And I was a little surprised at first that they began fighting. And then I realized, oh, this is about who gets control. Like, which side is more dominant?
I didn't even think it was necessarily about who gets control. Maybe more about, like, which side is, like, a stronger body. Like, oh, we've got to get in one of these bodies, so let's see what they can do.
That's true.
That's kind of how I read it, but it could be the control. It could be the two halves, because I don't think the two halves have like opposing aims or anything. But to me, I definitely took it as like, oh, let's test out these bodies and see which one will hold us better.
I like that theory better, actually. And it turns out that Aaron is the stronger one. He kills Quinn and then transforms.
Yeah.
Transforms into this weird, like,
puppet man.
Yeah, he's all muscle and purple eyes, and it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
So we're going to back up just a little bit, because I wanted to kind of get that out of the way before we jump into everything that had been going on with Malia and Lydia, and then we'll kind of get back to the present. But Malia and Lydia, Lydia says, look, Helwyn is not totally dead. And she's on the slab in the morgue. So there's that from the trailer that I was worried about, thinking she was dead. So, phew, everything's fine, mostly. I mean, everything's not fine, clearly, but, you know, Lydia's not dead. And she's trying to connect with Helwyn. And as usual, only 3 minutes of silence can go past before somebody interrupts her. And... she just can't get a connection with Helwyn, and she realizes it's because last time she did it, she was unconscious. Malia is all for knocking Lydia out, and Lydia's like, less pain, please. So she actually has her compress her chest until she passes out, which was a little hard to watch, and I don't think Malia necessarily enjoyed, but it got the job done, and Lydia did pass out so she could go talk to Helwyn. So she goes into this vision, and I really liked the feel of this, because this was, I mean, it was basically the inside of Helwyn's mind, because you saw the walls dripping with silver, which we kind of know later, I think, is part of
his brain.
Yeah, and then what eventually kills him. But Lydia has this like creepy, it reminded me a little of the gentleman from Buffy, because she's just like floating down the hallway. She's not actually walking, and it's not as creepy as the gentleman, but it definitely kind of served its purpose to make it feel otherworldly and not quite right. And she's walking down the hallway in Eichenhaus and finds Helwyn in his cell, and he kind of bangs his head on the wall a couple of times, and I think that triggers the idea in Lydia's mind that they have to get the bullet out. Then he tackles her through the wall and she wakes up. So I always enjoy Lydia's visions. I think they're really interesting. I mean, enjoy, in quotes. They're usually, bad news.
I was quite stressed out by the conundrum that they have in terms of knowing that if they wake him up to speak to him, that they're going to kill him.
You mean into the next part when they get to the hospital? They get to the... Yeah, so they go to the MRI... room. Lydia reads the manual.
When they were like in disguise in the scrubs and the masks.
It was cute. And Lydia reads the manual for the MRI and turns it on, because of course she does, and says this will pull the bullet out of his brain, but if they pull the bullet out, he'll start to heal, which means he'll heat up, and the silver flecks that are in his brain will melt and be absorbed, and he'll get silver poisoning, which will kill him. And so, yeah, they have this conundrum of, do we keep him the way he is and maybe figure out another way to get them out of there, which is unlikely, or do we wake him up, hope we can get the answers fast enough, knowing that he spent his entire life, his whole mission in life was to stop the Inukjuteh. He built Eichenhaus, he froze himself there, he only defrosted once the Inukjuteh was kind of active again. Yeah. And they decide, yeah, that's what he would want to do.
Mm.
And he wakes up. He says, you can't kill it. You can only trap it. And they tell them, you can't let the two halves merge. If two become one, Spice Girl song, it will kill you with a look. And then he dies. And Malia, for her part, having been so gung-ho about wanting to wake him up so that they can figure out what's going on with the Inukjuteh, looks mortified and devastated, and I think she really regrets having done that to him.
I really liked the performance from the actor who played Halwyn, like the fact that he was just like, what have you done? Like, what is going on? Like, what, like, and I don't know, I just really liked him. So yeah, I felt quite bad as well.
Yeah, it just, it kind of broke me. And we had talked in the beginning that, you know, he was gone so quickly. We hope he comes back, and he did. And then he's gone so quickly again. And I think he was a great actor, and he had a great look. And he really made this other hellhound different from Parrish. And clearly, you know, Halwyn had a lot of experience with the Inukjuteh and a lot of knowledge of it. It's too bad that he couldn't stick around to fight it more. I really would have liked to have seen more of him.
Yeah, I feel bad for him.
Mm-hmm. But they have this information now, which is basically the most important part. And we kind of immediately head back to the school, because at this point now we know Finch is the alpha of the pack. She has the tattoo of the primal pack. Again, I really liked this reveal. I just like that she was so strong that she could resist the emitter. She could resist the wolfsbane, although still a little confused about why exactly she was teaching in school and all of that. But Lydia saves Liam from the Inukjuteh now that it's merged.
How did she get there? How did that?
That fast?
Yeah, what? This is the one bit, and I'm not usually, like, taken out of things by, like, oh, where did that person come from? Like, where were they? Why are they now here? Mm-hmm. Where the hell did she come from? Like,
oh, I know. I have an answer to this. So okay. She hopped onto Malia's back and they ran really fast.
Okay. Okay, let's go with that.
Makes sense to me.
Okay.
So we do see the Inukjuteh now that it's formed in action. And it turns hunters into statues. And you guys know, don't usually say a whole lot of bad things about Teen Wolf. Love the show to death. I did not like this. I didn't. What? The statue thing.
The way
I didn't,
it looks, you may.
Yeah, I was not impressed. I'm sorry, but it just looked silly to me.
So the way you're talking about, the way they froze and like,
yeah.
and so it's kind of like dry ice, like, I guess, like when something's frozen with liquid nitrogen.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of expecting that they'd shatter, like, you know, if you push them over, that they would like smash, but
yeah. I don't know. It was kind of cool on the one hand, because like Greek mythology and all of that, but
at what cost?
Exactly. I think they could have done a little bit better with it, but you know, whatever. It is what it is. The Inukjuteh looks pretty good, so I guess we'll have to just understand that there needs to be balance.
Yeah.
Malia and all of them, Scott and everybody, kind of see what's happened to these hunters now that they turn to statues, and they say, we need to learn how to fight without seeing, and of course that means Deucalion's going to come back into play. So yeah. That'll
so
lead us.
What if it looks at you, and even if you've got your eyes closed? Is that allowed?
That is allowed.
Okay.
You just can't make eye contact.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, that'll obviously lead us into the second episode with Deucalion and all of that. But before we get there, shower scene. I actually really liked this. Scott was, you know, he's too much of a mess. He's all bloody and stuff. He needs to get into the shower. And Mila's like, go. And he kind of gives her this look like, you gonna turn around? And she just goes, you've seen me naked, which I actually really liked.
Oh, she's a weird girl.
I know, but I love it. And he takes off his shirt, she takes off her shirt, and they get into the shower together. And I think it was, you know, a little gratuitous. Like, it wasn't absolutely necessary to have this scene here, but at the same time, a little bit of happiness at the end of this episode was probably warranted, and it was really good, and I liked the sort of, like, the intimacy of it, because it was sexual, obviously, but it was a little slower, and it was a little, like, gentler, and I like these two together, because remember Malia with Styles? They were, like, she was, like, crazy wild woman, and she still is kind of crazy wild woman, but her relationship with Scott is a lot deeper and calmer, and I like that.
Yeah, it was quite gratuitous, wasn't it?
It was. I'm not complaining,
you know, but it's still nice for them, I suppose. Yeah, you know, I feel like they quite haven't really talked about what's going on, but you know,
Who needs talking?
Back to the Inukite. There's not very much on the internet this legend for Native American legend, but it does say in one of the pages that I found that the two-face, the traditional legend, if people make eye contact with the second face, they'll either be struck dead or paralyzed with fear until the two-face returns to murder them. So that sounds like what we've got going on.
Yeah.
I
wonder if you can come out of that frozen state.
That's the thing. Are they just frozen till he comes around with, like, you know, to finish the job, mm-hmm. or is it they're gone for good? Like, if someone gets frozen, like what we're going to see in the next episode, like mm-hmm. Lydia's visions, is that
permanent
or is it like that's a stasis, and if you kill the Inukite or if you undo it, then it, you know, then it won't be as bad.
Yeah, we'll have to find out. So you ready to discuss this final scene? I was so mad.
Oh, I suppose. Yeah, hypnotize people, put them in a trance. I'm just reading all of the Two-Face legend. Oh, cool. Okay, so here's another one. The Two-Face has the power to hypnotize people or put them in a trance with his eyes. Anyone who looks into his eyes will be doomed. The victim will become entranced. Then Two-Face will approach and kill them with the spikes on his elbows. The corpse will then be dragged off to be eaten.
Oh, nice.
So there's another take on it.
Okay, cool. Yep. Love that last part, being eaten. Yeah. It's great.
Gerard's a bad man.
Gerard is a bad man. Gerard is still afraid of the Inukite, which was good. I'm glad that was displayed, because Gerard, for as crazy as he is and as confident as he is, I like the fact that the Inukite still has some effect on him. So he goes to the creature and he's like, look, dude, not going to look you in the eyes. Hope that's cool with you. Don't want to die today, but listen to the deal that I have for you. He offers to weaken Scott with the proper poison, and the Inukite will kill him and all of his, and his friend. Liam, I assume, is what he meant. Which was kind of weird that he just wanted those two out of the picture, but...
Oh, I thought he said friends, plural.
I thought he said friend, but friends makes more sense, which is why I was so confused. But yeah, anyway. And then Gerard will drive all the supernatural creatures from Beacon Hills, and the Inukite can be free to cause as much fear as he wants, except, like, what? Because... how is Gerard okay with this?
How Inukite, is this a solution?
The Inukite is a supernatural creature, and also it causes immense fear. Like, he's going to do that to you, guy. Like, why? Why do you think, this is any sort of solution whatsoever?
I don't know. Gerard makes no sense to me often, so...
I mean, unless, which is very probable, he has this, you know, card in his back pocket, like, okay, once all the supernatural creatures are out of the way, once Scott and his friends are dead and the Inukite thinks everything's fine, then I'll figure out a way to kill him. And it's not like he's going to tell the Inukite that, so it's very probable,
do you think he's, like, using him?
I would imagine.
Yeah.
It's like the lesser of two evils, except it's the greater of two evils. Gerard is crazy, though. I still stand by that. But the last line of the episode, I kind of liked it, to be honest.
Did you?
I did. I'm sorry. But
you are such a drama queen.
I know. Gerard holds up a silver bullet, and he's talking about how legends have some merit. And he goes, legend says you need silver to kill a werewolf. The truth is, you need an argent. And I was like, I kind of liked it.
Oh, Karen.
I'm sorry.
It was very dramatic.
It was really dramatic. That's what Gerard does, though. Him and Peter.
Yeah.
God.
I prefer Peter's drama, to be
honest. I also prefer Peter's drama. So let's jump into 619 now. This one's called Broken Glass. And you said your quote is from this episode. So what's your quote?
Yes. So I had my favorite moment. Well, there was two, and they were equally ridiculous. What do you think my favorite moment was?
Did they involve Derek Hale?
Well, yes. The one I'm thinking of does. Yes.
I mean, I'm not. I would assume maybe it was the car one, but we had already seen that before.
No, it was the phone.
The phone, yes, I did love that. I almost picked that one, but I knew you'd probably kill me.
When Derek, realized that Chris was tracking him and pulled him in and then realized it was Chris and said, you could have called. And Chris is like, you don't have a phone. And Derek's like, oh, I should probably get one. He's such an idiot. I love him so much. Oh, my God, I love him so much.
My favorite quote was actually between Peter and Lydia, which I was a little surprised about, but she's telling him about her visions and how terrible it all is, and he just goes, do you ever see anything remotely optimistic? And she goes, it's optimistic if you prevent it, and she kind of says it through gritted teeth and is like, help me, please, and it was just really funny to me, the delivery, especially on her end.
I was very interested in them too in this episode. It was
weird.
And I don't know what to feel about it because I feel about it, and then I feel weird about thinking it was awesome.
Me too. We're going to get into that because I have questions. But before we do that, let's hit the opening scene. We start off in Brazil. Chris is running through the rain. He hops into a police car, and the police officer in there immediately pulls a gun on him and is like, all right, take all your weapons out. And they do the usual thing of like, and the one in your waist pocket and the knife up your sleeve and all this. And I was like, all right, you know, this has been done before, but it's still pretty funny. And the police officer doesn't want to tell Chris anything because he's superstitious. And he's kind of, you know, Chris gives him money and he's like, you do realize this has nothing to do with greed, right? Like, I'm just terrified and everybody else is terrified. And he starts telling this story. He says, it began with a mass murder. And we see Derek walk into a burnt down house. There were 12 bodies, no identities, no suspects, no clues. We see Derek attack men in a warehouse. And I kind of like the story that the police officer is telling while all of this is happening. And he says he came in broad daylight, attacking in silence. They said he moved with impossible speed, his teeth as sharp as razors. He stood more than 8 feet tall. And Chris is just like, dude, really? And I just love it. This is the legend of Derek Hale. And it was just so ridiculous. And I have a feeling that if Derek knew about what people were saying, he would his chest would pump up a little bit. I think he'd be kind of proud of himself.
Oh, Derek, look, it's nice that he has some self-confidence. Mm-hmm. So the murder was of werewolves, of potentially innocent werewolves by, you know, more hunters. And the Brazilian police were called to the murders, but Derek got there first in terms of the hunters as well. So who were the victims that the police found? The people Derek killed or the people that were killed by the hunters? Both?
Derek didn't kill anybody. He just knocked him out. So the police officers definitely found the bodies of the werewolves who were killed, and probably the hunters had run off by the time they got there. And I like the short little exchange, and I know at Comic-Con people went nuts for this line, and I did too. I definitely cheered. And the police officer turns to Chris, is like, "You believe in werewolves?" And Chris just says, "I believe in Derek Hale." And admittedly, there was a lot of cheering and screaming because that was pretty great. And yeah, so we do find out that they're hunting werewolves because Gerard wants Derek specifically. Any idea why? Other than to kill him? Maybe it is just to kill him.
Probably just to kill him.
Yeah.
Well, given that what we discover later, maybe, you know, he's sort of a prize for someone else.
Oh, perhaps. Perhaps.
Yeah.
We'll have to see.
Or it could just be that he wants to wipe out, like, he doesn't want anyone with a vendetta, right. You know, like, that, like, to come back, like.
Mm-hmm. Gotta kill those Hales. Where's Cora? And then we get the, trust me, he drove line, which was pretty funny, and Derek doing donuts in the driveway, because of course he did. Like, it's I'll nice never get over
to
that.
Have fun.
Yeah. He's like, all right, I can have 10 seconds of fun, and then it's all business.
All angst. Ten yes. Of fun. 1 year of angst.
And we see Chris go to the site where the bodies were, and Beacon Hills is written in blood on the wall. I'm assuming this was a message for Derek?
Uh-huh.
Telling him, like...
Yeah, I'm assuming it wasn't by him.
Right, yeah, like, that would be messed up.
Yeah.
And wouldn't really make sense, but yeah, so that was...
It was a message being like, hey, you go back to where you came from so we can kill you there.
Yeah, totally. And admittedly, like, Derek doesn't really want to do that, but we'll get to that in a little bit. We head to Beacon Hills, though, and we see the sheriff get pulled over by one of his deputies who gives him some advice, in quotes, and is like, stay out of our way. We don't want to hurt you. And loved this line from the sheriff. You're coming for my friends. You're coming for me.
See, this was a very big deal in general, like, again, in the wider scope of the world, in terms of, like, I don't understand how any person can, like, be friends with any other person and just be like, oh, yeah, like, what happens to your minority, like, isn't my business, if you know what I mean. Like, it might not be that you're, like, the number one voice for it, but, like, you should still care and, like, be an ally and be like, oh yeah, I just don't care about your human rights. Like, we are friends, but, like, I just, like, you know,
that's not my problem.
That's not my problem. Like, you know, like, that's something I can't fathom in general. Like, so yeah, it was pretty great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I really appreciated this too, because it wasn't that long ago that the sheriff was kind of like questioning, not necessarily his allyship with Scott and everybody, but he was like, look, like, they did
the
something
law
wrong.
Has to do the law. Yeah,
exactly. And so he's kind of flipped on this a little bit in a very positive way, in a way that is having him stand up with Scott and everybody else. And, like, also a part of me just really loved that he called Scott his friend. Like,
oh, sheriff doesn't have any friends his own age.
Yeah, he kind of doesn't.
Yeah, it's not even like my son's. It's not even like my son's friends.
Yeah,
it's like my friends.
Yeah, who's in high school still? Well, he did graduate, but yeah. So okay, back to school, back to underground. Ethan's still being tortured, which is pretty traumatic, actually. And Monroe is teaching the students of Beacon Hills how to capture, kill, contain werewolves in a way that's making Ethan, like, the subject of her little twisted classroom. And I think more than anything else she's done, this really kind of disgusted me.
Yeah, it was gross. I did not care for it. It was really, like, I don't know, it was just really sickening and dehumanizing and all sorts of things. And we see a lot of people there that we recognize from the town as well.
And it's worse than dehumanizing because, like, you wouldn't, like, a normal person, even a person like Monroe wouldn't even do that to a dog. Like, this creature in her eyes is even worse than an animal. And the way that she was parading him in front of them and doing what she had to do, like, she comforts Sydney and is like, I was once afraid to stand up too, but, like, this is what we have to do now. And she stabs Ethan with the arrow and she goes, it's their turn to hide. And she flips the lights on and she's arming these kids with assault rifles. And we learn later that she at least teaches them how to use it, which, like, for me was a small comfort, which I know is kind of messed up.
I know.
But I was like, I mean, at least they know how to use it. Like, they're not just going to accidentally shoot each other, which is not
that
a great thing.
Give
I'm
me
just
a comfort.
Well, that's fair. I'm a little strange, as we've already established, at least in this episode. But yeah, so she arms the kids and everything, and we're kind of left wondering, where's Jackson? And
because Ethan is there.
Right, and Ethan is really torn up, and all he is asking is, where's Jackson? Where's Jackson?
How can any, like, how can any of the crowd be like this guy chained to the fence? He's not, like, fighting back. He's not attacking us. Like, how could they, like, just see this and be like, yeah, this seems like a reasonable, like, way to treat him?
Because they're afraid. They're definitely afraid. And we see the Inukite kind of watching from the shadows. So it's something that I think is getting heightened. But Lydia wakes up with the same question. Where's Jackson? And
is he hearing Ethan?
I think she was hearing Ethan, yeah.
Yeah.
Because she said a couple other things while she was dreaming that very much fit in with what was going on. Wherever Monroe was in the basement there. So I thought this was really interesting for Nolan too, because Nolan has progressively gotten kind of more scared of what's being asked of him and what's going on in this little circle that he's joined. And we see him kind of questioning, like, he's looking around and he's a little concerned by how people are acting and how savage they're being. When he dumps Ethan off, like, he feels a little bad. He looks at the blood on his hands and, like, that was kind of a great, albeit, like, very obvious metaphor of literally having blood on his hands for everything that he's done.
And she calls him up as well and is like, you know, look at Nolan. Nolan shot everyone. Yay for Nolan, you know, like, so that was also,
And when he gets to school the next day, no one trusts him. They're all afraid of him. They're afraid that if they say something, he'll report back to Monroe. They could get in trouble. And Liam is like, yeah, it kind of sucks, doesn't it? Like, this is what I've been feeling.
Yeah.
But plot twist, kind of. I mean, again, we saw it coming a little bit, but Nolan's like, I want to help you. Like, he goes to Liam and he's like, I want to help you. I want to show you something at the hospital. And then I'm going to let you beat me up so that it looks like you beat the information out of me. And
this is also my favorite line. Well.
Yeah. And Liam just goes, yeah, I'm good with that plan.
Yeah.
Even later when he was like, that was the best part of the plan and I didn't even get to do it. It was kind of funny. But we do get Chris following Derek and we get the whole phone call conversation. We'll revisit them in a little bit, but that was pretty funny. We jump over to Deucalion now, though. And Deucalion is attempting to teach Scott and Malia how to fight without using their eyes. And there's a lot of different ways that you can go about doing this, including using echolocation and the heat signatures and feeling the pressure and stuff around you and listening and all of that. And Deucalion has always been kind of like, he hasn't wanted to be in the middle of this fight.
Yeah.
And he's just like, look, why aren't you all running for your lives? And Scott just goes, because we don't run. And Deucalion says, now that sounds like an alpha. Let's get started. And not that this was necessarily a departure from what Deucalion has said before, but I think it just goes to show, like, once again, somebody is putting a lot of faith in Scott and believing that he has the capability of defeating whatever this is. And I was just wondering, you know, now that it's not Melissa, how do you kind of feel about that attitude?
I don't know. I still just don't know what they think he can do. Like, I'm sorry to have so much doubt in Scott, and I don't particularly have doubt in Scott. I just don't understand why he's Werewolf Jesus. Like, you know, what it is that, like, to revisit an old throwback. Like, what about him? What do they think he's going to do? If he hasn't come up with the ideas, mm-hmm. what do they think he's going to do?
I think that's the thing. They don't know. They just have faith he'll do something.
I like more information.
I also like a little more concrete evidence that, like, I'm going to live before I do something. But, you know.
Okay, I guess.
They've survived a lot of years in Beacon Hills following Scott. And I think that they just trust that they're the good guys and that they will find a way. And this is cutting it down to the wire, though. Like, I kind of was thinking the Inukite would at least be kind of out of the picture before the finale, and then we can just deal with Gerard or vice versa. Although I had a feeling Gerard was going to be, like, the finale. But, like, no. This is still a thing. And next week's episode is supersized by, like, 6 minutes or something. It's not like we're getting a 90-minute finale. So how they're going to pack everything in there, I'm really curious. So there wasn't a whole lot of humor in this episode, or even the last episode. There was a little bit, but it kind of was spread out in very, like, significant, like, very specific moments because a lot of other stuff was going on. But one of my favorite moments is when Scott knows the definition of all those big words. Melia gets, like, really frustrated and waits until he puts his blindfold on to kind of give him this face.
And then it was so ridiculous because, as well, I think at one point she knew one of them, and and Scott was like, "Good job" to her, and I'm like, "Oh my god!" I was like, "Oh, ridiculous."
Oh, it was so funny. And then they were both blindfolded, and they're both following Jekyllian around, and Malia totally runs into one of the walls, and she goes, "I'm not feeling so superior right now."
I did enjoy this training, though. I think it's a little bit, like, late. Not late, but, like,
again, down to the wire. Like,
yeah, I did enjoy Malia. Like it was such a good character moment. Like, once they start training, when she gets to punch Scott, and she's not like, "Oh my god, so sorry." She's like, "Yay!"
I do like that too.
Yeah.
And I love some training montages and stuff, but I felt like if this had come in an earlier episode, it would have felt a little bit better versus, like, here. I was just like, all right, like, can you guys just focus already and, like, get this done? Because literally you have to fight this thing in 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's too late.
Too late. Maybe you should just work on, like, I don't know, somebody closing their eyes and a whole bunch of people standing around outside in a circle
left,
and saying, like, I thought that was going to be their solution, because at one point Scott is fighting Jekyllian and Malia is like, get up. And I was like, oh, this is what they're going to do. It's going to be like tag team. No, it's not. Like, Scott all of a sudden just had an epiphany to figure out what to do, which is fine. But I think it was a little rushed, basically. Mm-hmm. So, jumping back to Chris and Derek, which was kind of exciting. I really wanted more Derek in this, but what we got was going to have to suffice. And he just goes, "More than one hail, more than one vault," and they go find another hail vault. And I want to know,
is this back in America or still in South America?
I think it's still in South America. I think it's in Brazil. I don't know, like, could it be Cora's or is it somebody else's? I kind of hope it's somebody else's, because that's interesting, but I don't think we'll ever figure out whose. But it turns out that Derek took a poison/antidote, or I think they were maybe speculating that perhaps it could be an antidote, but Derek took the yellow wolfsbane liquid from the crime scene. It's what Gerard was looking for, and he's going to go hide it in the vault. And
it's a bit of a throwback to the fact that, you know, Chris also took yellow wolf's bane to cure Gerard.
Yeah.
You know, of his drippy disgusting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think this is why, like, this confused me a little bit, because they were talking about poison antidote, but then, like, going back over the end of last episode, Gerard wants to weaken Scott. And I think this is how he's going
and
to be doing
in the
it.
Previous episode, you should have used the yellow wolf's bane, like an early plant that, you know, an early throwback to the fact that this is like a different, more powerful thing.
But the FBI stopped Derek and Chris, and except they've got a mole, and Kate kills the FBI agents, shoots Derek multiple times, shoots her brother, and takes the yellow wolf's bane, and she does her usual little flirting thing with Derek. And what is it she initially says? She's like, she says something about
his eyes and his cheekbones. Like, yeah. Oh, you need to charm it out of them or something. Like,
yeah.
And I loved her screaming at Chris as well. Like you've always got to be such a killjoy, don't you? Yeah. Or whatever it was. The dynamic between the three of them in this scene was my favorite scene in the show.
Loved her entry. Once again, spoiled myself because the one name I saw on accident was hers. And I was so mad about it. But I really liked her coming out of the lights of the FBI, kneeling down. You're not really supposed to know who it is, but, like, you can cut. She has a style, so you can kind of maybe venture who it is. She takes off her hat, and her hair is beautiful, and she's just like, hey. And I'm like, yes. Like, I don't like Kate, but I love the actress. I love Jill, and I think she does a great job of making her, like, that shit. So.
And do you think that, you know, like, she's already on the side of Gerard, or is he trying to worm in? Like, you know, has he rejected her now that she's a werejaguar? Like, because Chris points out, like, that he hunts stuff like her.
Mm-hmm. I think she's still trying to worm her way in. I don't even necessarily think that she thinks Gerard will take her under his wing, because she says, she just wants the wolf's bane to go into a bullet to kill Scott.
Yeah, so, she's like, if I kill Scott McCall, Daddy will love me.
Or even, like, revenge. Like, she wants to kill Scott because she hates Scott and everything that he stands for and everything that he's done to her, which is stupid. Just, like, you know, Gerard and Kate definitely have the same mentality, and they're both kind of misguided in blaming Scott for everything, but... apparently there's more yellow wolf's bane somewhere else, because she asks for more, but we don't know where it is. And this is also kind of where I was questioning, you know, is this a cure for Gerard? And if so, like, what is Gerard? Like, is there going to be a final reveal that he's actually some crazy monster?
That I had so many thoughts going through my brain here. Mm. Firstly, when Derek was like, it's a cure, you know, like, I thought maybe he had Kate in the place and was trying to cure her. Maybe they'd had, I was like, oh no, please don't make it that they've, like, fallen in love again. Like, oh, please, God. I'll just die. And then it wasn't that, thank God. But then they were like, cure, yeah, like, need it for Gerard. Is it, like, so Gerard can use it, or for Gerard to take, like, you know, for Gerard to be dosed with? Like, I got very confused here as well.
Yeah. But if I had to guess, I would say it's going to be used to kill Scott.
Yay.
Good luck with that, guys. I don't think you're going to succeed.
I think he probably won't die.
Agreed. So back in Beacon Hills, Parrish meets with the sheriff, who's hiding out down in the tunnels. And
God, he just live in his house.
I think he's worried that they're going to come for him, and he wants to be useful, and I think there's just stuff down there. So, But Monroe has all the deputies going through accident reports back for, like, a decade, and strange reports are being collected at the hospital as well. And it turns out, like, obviously, they're trying to find supernaturals, people who healed miraculously, people who got into, like, major accidents and walked away from them. They're making lists of people that they're going to go after. And this just kind of triggered in my mind, remember that list that Lydia put in her mother's
desk? Yeah, I was thinking about it as well. So, like, is that... And if they had that list, if Lydia had that list, did she know about Edgar and Mrs. Finch? And like, they clearly did not know everyone.
Right.
Like, that's the thing. Scott is not really, like, Scott's pack is not really the most knowledgeable of the supernaturals in Beacon Hills. Apparently, no. There's tons being hidden outside of him. So I don't know.
Yeah, and I feel like that list that Lydia had could have been one that they had compiled, which would have been like 10 names. And then there's like, you know, 100 people in the school who are supernatural creatures. And they're like, so I don't really know. But I'm hoping that that list kind of comes back into play. Otherwise, it seemed a little pointless to me. But again, it feels like there's so much to pack into this finale that I'm really worried they're not going to be able to tie up all of the little plot points.
Me too. I have no idea.
But luckily, Nolan is trying to work against Monroe now and everything that she's doing. And Nolan tells Liam that, you know, a couple of nurses picked up guns that night when they were torturing Ethan, and kind of shows Liam who they can't trust in the hospital, and then takes him to the ICU. There were patients that had been brought in the night before, and they're hooked up to Wolfsbane drips. And we don't really know what it's for.
I am assuming that at the moment, Monroe, at least, they have this, like, because they were willing to kill those kids from the other pack, Chang and Tierney, because they knew they murdered people. Maybe this is, like, supernaturals who they've proven, like, because Aaron was killing the supernaturals because he was the Inukite. It wasn't actually Monroe's team, like, killing the supernaturals that they tested at school. Maybe they're, like, keeping all of these people in, like, the Wolfsbane is, like, to weaken them, and they're, like, keeping them in, like, basically, like, a coma or an induced, like maybe that's where Jackson is. Like, you know, like, he's one of them. And that they're, like, every werewolf or that they catch, they are putting, that they don't know is necessarily a killer, that right now they're not at just outright slaughtering them, or maybe they have some plan to, like, take them all and put them in, like, a thing and kill them all together. I don't know. But I feel like this is super captured and imprisoned supernaturals being, like, sedated.
That does make sense to me, although I just keep thinking, like, why not just kill them now? Like, Monroe doesn't seem trigger shy, and she had no problem going after Brett and, you know, killing him right away, and everything that's happened since the premiere. But it's a good question, and I wonder if they're special in some way, because that would be maybe Isaac is there.
Oh my god, Isaac's not coming.
I know. I'm really starting to believe it, and it's making me so sad. Whatever. So Monroe knew Nolan was going to do this, and it was her plan all along for Nolan to lead Liam and his friends to the hospital, and Gabe is there to deliver the news and to deliver a few punches to his face, and totally knocks Nolan out.
Yeah, they've been using Nolan as like a... it's so weird.
Yeah, and I mean, I kind of like this because I really like Nolan and I really like the actor. I think he does a great job, like I've said before. And I was kind of hoping that he would come around, and he has come around in a very sort of organic way. It wasn't a complete flip. It was like, I feel a little uncomfortable about this in one episode, and the next episode, like, I feel more uncomfortable. Exactly. So I was kind of sad that he got beat up, and I don't think he's dead. Like, he just got punched in the face a couple of times, but, like, he definitely stayed down for the
count. Can you imagine if this show had a teenager, like, literally beating another teenager to death, like, non-supernatural, just, like, beat him in the face till he died?
That would not be good. Not good at all. So Lydia's looking for Scott, and Peter's looking for Malia, and it turns out that the cell phone towers are down, so Gerard is cutting them all off from each other. And this is something I want to spend a little bit of time talking about, especially because of one of Peter's lines. Peter and Lydia are talking. It seems fine. Like, Lydia is, you know, they're both a little sassy to each other, but Lydia's not afraid of Peter or anything like that. And it's clear at some point to Peter that she's not telling him something. She's not telling him the whole truth. And he goes, "Don't hold back on me. I never held back on you." And I was like,
this
oh.
This was so weird. And oh, I loved it, but it was so weird.
It was like, I put in the doc here, problematic question mark, because I know there are a lot of people out there who absolutely hate the Peter and Lydia dynamic and what Peter did to her. And the fact that he never really got his comeuppance for that. I mean, like, Peter's been through some shit at this point, but it was never really, like, Lydia never really confronted him in a way that was satisfying for a lot of fans, considering what he did to her in those early seasons. And the fact that he was the one that bit her and jump-started this whole thing. There was never a satisfying kind of solution for fans to this Peter-Lydia dynamic. And the fact that he kind of brings this up in this way, I'm just wondering, like, I don't think people are particularly going to like
yeah, this. Like an acknowledgement of their relationship. I found that really kind
yeah.
of, yeah. It woke me up a bit. You know, it was like, oh, like it was kind of like it really jumped out that they brought that up, you mm-hmm. know, just in general, that those two have a unique history.
To be fair, Peter has come a long way from season one, and he's calmed down a lot, and Lydia is much more capable of taking care of herself. So I feel like their dynamic, where once it was definitely like a predator and prey kind of thing, is a lot more on equal footing. And so it doesn't feel as gross to me as it once did.
Yeah, it's not that it feels gross. It's just that's just, it is. There is a history there that's really weird. But just that statement that don't hold back on me, I never held back on you, in terms of what, like just being honest with each other about the circumstance? Because he kind of did. Like, he kind of lied and coerced her into raising him from the dead. So I would sort of count that as holding back.
I assumed he was talking about the honesty thing, which, granted, I mean, he is pretty upfront. He does lie, but like when it suits him, he's brutally honest. But I also felt like this kind of could have meant another thing, which I didn't particularly like. But I don't think it was meant to be that way.
What do you think it could have meant?
Just in the way that he sort of, like, he attacked her and he used her, and that kind of dynamic that they had in season two, I think it was, two and three, where it was just two. Like... Yeah, it was just very predatory.
As in, like, don't hold back on me. Like, as in, don't be gentle with me. I was never gentle with you.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So I just think some people are going to read into that and they're not going to like what they see. But
I think probably you're right.
It's been said, so it is what it is. And Lydia does tell Peter, you know, the truth. And the truth is that she saw him turn to stone. She saw Ethan turn to stone, and Jackson, and Malia, and Derek, and Scott. And this is where we get the line, do you ever see anything remotely optimistic? It's optimistic if you prevent it. And this actually kind of scared me, especially when we saw Jackson. I was like, no, I don't want him to be dead.
No!
And, like, Malia was a little shocking. And then to see Scott, I was like, okay, clearly this hasn't happened yet. And clearly it's probably not going to happen. But I will admit, a little tiny bit of me was, like, a little worried for Scott.
About turning into a stone ice statue.
And dying.
I don't think he will. Maybe he will. I don't know. I think he'll probably be okay.
Yeah, probably.
But we'll see. Maybe it'll just be that everyone dies.
Maybe. God, that would be awful. I think, I was going to say, I think Deucalion would be okay with that because he's being very frustrated right now, except he might actually be dead. So, like, that kind of took the wind out of my sails. But before we get to that,
Deucalion.
I really... Yeah. I really liked his line, though. Like, I didn't think it was possible, but I'm actually starting to wish I was blind again because Scott and Malia are so bad. And I loved his little bit of humor here.
Yeah. Poor guy, though.
Yeah, and Deucalion kind of takes the kid gloves off here, and he decides to come at Scott for real and tells him, you know, take off your blindfold, close your eyes, I'm going to attack you, and you, like, I'm good at killing people, so, like, I'm not holding back. You're going to have to figure this out. And Scott does, which is great. But the reason why they're kind of doing it this way, and the reason why they have this discussion, Gideon is still standing there, is because Scott doesn't want to believe that the Inukite is preying on a fear that is already inside people.
This was the thing I was talking about at the beginning of the episode, by the way. It was this moment that I was like, this is, I was trying to remember and now I remember. But yeah.
Yeah, this just blew my mind because I truly believe this fear is inside these people. And the fact that it's getting heightened by the Inukite doesn't like make them bad people.
Make it not real. Yeah.
But the idea that Scott believes that these people aren't going to be inherently afraid of him because of what he is super naive, even for Scott.
Yeah, and he I think he says, I can't, like, I won't or I can't believe that or something. Like, it's very, that moment of Deucalion addressing, like, what if it's not just the Inukite? Like, what if this is a real thing being exacerbated? How are you going to deal with that? And he's just like, I can't believe that about people. And I'm like, you are an idiot. Like, sorry, but it's so real. Like, and so, yeah, I don't know, like, how we're going to deal with him, like, having to, maybe he'll get up and give a speech and change everyone's minds. I don't know. But the fact that he genuinely thinks, like, if everyone just knew the truth, they wouldn't be prejudiced, then that's dangerously naive.
Yeah, it is. And I'd like to think that if Scott proves, like, if Scott can defeat the Inukite, if he can prove that Gerard was manipulating everybody, I think a lot of people will realize that they were feeding into their fear. But at the same time, again, like, that doesn't discount the fact that, like, a lot of them were afraid before the Inukite even came around. A lot of them, whenever, you know, they see something weird going on, like, they fight against believing that it's true because they don't want to think there are werewolves.
Yeah. Oh, poor Scott, he's going to have to find out that people aren't as good as he wants them to be.
Right. But, you know, that's Scott. He'll still keep fighting for them. Always. Mm. Maybe he can give the Independence Day speech.
I don't know if that's going to solve everything.
It solves everything, Natalie.
I don't know. I don't know.
It solves everything. To
solve this. Sorry.
So Mason makes a pretty interesting comparison, which gives us the title of our episode, Broken Glass. He talks about Kristallnacht, which is was a night when the Nazis rounded up all the Jews in one night, and it was called Night of the Broken Glass. That's what it means in German. And he kind of realizes that that's what Gerard and everyone else is doing to them. They're coming for them, all of them at the same time, rounding up the supernatural creatures and then, you know, imprisoning them or killing them. We're not really sure yet. And the idea that they flat out compared them to Nazis, again, very poignant, very relatable right now, extremely relevant.
Yeah. Oh, God. Do you think that they're, like, because they talk about that, and then when Corey and Mason go in the hospital, they realize also that they're bait, you know, that they've been pulled in as bait. And so do you think that the hospital is where it's all going to go down? Like, they're going to lure everyone there and blow it up or something?
Oh, God. That's low. Like, yeah, like, I know that they're, like, Nazis, but Jesus.
Like, as in, like, you know, get all our people out, get Scott there, you know, like, get, you know, everyone lured to the hospital and then, like, put everyone there and blow it up or something.
But it's a hospital. Like, my God. I don't know. I'm not really sure where all this is going to take place, unless, like, we're still feeding into Lydia's memories, which is, or her vision, which is the shipping containers.
Yeah.
Which kind of leads us into the end of the episode, because Lydia and Peter show up just in time to warn Scott. They're still there at the shipping containers training, and all of a sudden, Deucalion is shot multiple times and hits the ground, and we realize that the hunters are there already.
Yeah.
And Deucalion's still a werewolf, so, like, he's capable of healing, but, like, he seemed kind of dead to me.
Depends what's in the bullet.
Yeah, if they're Wolfsbane, he gone. And that's actually really upsetting. Like, I really like Deucalion. Yeah.
And he was trying to, you know, be passive, you know, like, as right. well. So.
He did not want to be in the middle of this. And he, in a lot of ways, he's kind of the first casualty of this war that has officially begun. Hunter's shot yep. first.
So good.
So, I mean, that's 18 and 19. You have any predictions for 20?
No. Do you?
I have some hopes and dreams. My hopes,
okay,
and dreams,
hopes and dreams,
they are that, well, we know, like, Derek and Styles are going to team up and come back, which is really exciting. I can't wait for that. I'm hoping we get a fair amount of cameos. I'm hoping we see a lot of people share the screen who haven't shared the screen in a long time. I really want Jackson to come back into the fold and meet with Lydia and Styles and all of that.
And not be dead.
Yeah. Definitely not be dead. I'm hoping for a gruesome death for Gerard. I want something very satisfying. Like, I'm not even gonna pretend. I want it to be satisfying. And I hope we leave off on a note that is that's hopeful. Not just hopeful for Scott and the pack, but in a way that shows the town is ready to stand up for the supernatural creatures, and that they understand that these people are fighting for them, not, you know, trying to kill them. Mm. But, like, again, there's so much to pack into this final episode, and I'm just, I'm a little worried.
Yeah, I have no idea. Like, I really can't predict at this time. Like, yeah, again, like, it's all too short now, and I really don't know what they're going to do. Do you want it to end with, like, a big battle? Not a battle, but, like, do you want it to end with kind of an affirmation scene of, like, the town accepting them, or do you want it to end with, like, everyone gets ice cream, like, a ha-ha-ha, like, after the fact?
Oh. Like the final scene?
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind if the final scene was a little bit of a time jump or something.
Yeah, that could be. Could be.
Because that would make me really happy, and that kind of gives you a sense that everything's okay, and it gives you a better sense of where they end up. And I think, like, we've been with these characters so long that looking a little bit into the future, I think fans will really enjoy that.
And that allows them to be a bit happier as well, because, like, yeah, you can't have, let's get ice cream after, like, probably several people yeah. died, if you know what I mean? But it's like 5 years later, they're allowed to be happy and get yeah. ice cream. Yeah, like, you know what I mean?
Derek on the beach.
Derek is never going to a beach. He would burn.
He would might. Oh, he can have little suntan lotion on his nose. Wear a big floppy hat.
Oh, I love him.
Gosh. Side note, I watched American Assassin last night.
Oh, yeah? How was that?
It was not the greatest. Like, it was good.
Really?
It was good, but, like, it was a fairly typical, like, military thriller kind of movie. Like, literally, I went there for Dylan, and Dylan didn't disappoint, so, like, I'm fine. Like, it doesn't really matter. I'm writing a review for it right now.
It wasn't, like, the craziest groundbreaking movie
yeah,
ever.
Yeah, that was the thing. Like, there was nothing special about it. It was good, but it didn't, like, do anything out of the ordinary. But I have hope that maybe the second movie will be good, and Dylan did a really good job, and I like seeing him in older roles with a lot more action, and It was weird. At one point, he got really sassy, and I leaned over to Kristen in the movie theater, and I goes, there's our Styles.
Wow, you are. You're that guy.
It started, and I leaned over to Kristen, and I was like, our baby's all grown up now.
Oh, my God. You are so strange. I mean, yeah.
It was just weird. It was weird. But it was good weird. So, anyway. All right. Yeah, this wraps up 18 and 19. We got the finale next. This is it, you guys. I'm not prepared. I might, like, we have the screener for the finale. I might wait to watch it till next Friday, like when we usually record. I might not watch it right away.
I don't know. I might watch it on Friday.
It's really stressful.
I don't know. It's a lot. Maybe we should see, I don't know, like, maybe we should ask people to let us know. Would they rather, like, do we want to record our reactions, like, without seeing the fan reaction? Or do we want to, like, you know, have feedback to the final episode on the final episode? Or do we want to do another episode that's all about the reaction?
We could do I veto, or whatever is the opposite of veto, because isn't veto like canceling? Executive decision. Yep. I would like an entire episode on reactions and thoughts from people now that it's finally over, like kind of how they feel about it as a whole. Because, like, I'm definitely writing a letter, like a thank you Teen Wolf letter, and it's going to destroy my soul.
Oh no.
And I have a feeling a lot of other people are going to kind of want a cathartic release. So that could be interesting.
Yeah. So a few responses to your article about Scott getting blood on his hands as well, or just one of them was just saying, Hannah, HanB29 says, if this wasn't the last season, I'd say yes, because we're so close to the end now, I don't think it's going to happen in terms of Scott being forced to get blood on his hands. Someone else says, Cassandra says, Miss Monroe must die, just saying, and where's Gerard getting all the money to fund the global war?
he's selling guns.
Yeah, Nurse Brack says, I think they'll find a way for him to avoid it, but narratively I think it's the wrong decision in terms of Scott not getting blood on his hands, so he'd prefer that the plot did actually go there, but that narratively they'll avoid it. Sherman, Dame Wolf, says, I hope Kate takes responsibility for the fact she kickstarted all the supernatural by burning the drama by burning the Hale House. Somehow I do not think that Kate will be taking that responsibility.
Probably not. Although that would be great, like her get up on stage. Sorry, guys.
Maybe like Gerard will like read her, this was all you know, like you. You did this, and and then she'll be like, Daddy, I did it for you, and then they'll kill each other.
That works for me.
Yeah, so, okay, so we'll do our episode, and then we'll do one episode that's all about reactions, that's fine.
Which means you all have to tweet us a lot and send us emails and stuff.
Oh, gosh. All right. Well, this is it, then.
This is it. I feel like I'm dying.
You're not dying.
I'm gonna be reborn on the other side of this, and it's gonna be weird.
I was gonna say, is this like an organic end to our friendship? Like, it's been nice knowing you, Karen. Bye bye.
We will never talk again.
A parting of the ways.
We can't talk about Teen Wolf. What else do we have in common?
Yeah, nothing. Literally
nothing. There's nothing.
All right. Okay. We're going to go. And next week will be the last one. So until then, bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah. cord.
I've literally forgotten what happens in which episode. Like, here, it's all blended.
That's okay. I took notes, so. Did you see my very important request at the top of the dock?
Do you mean the Spice Girls
song? Yes, I do mean the Spice Girls song.
I mean, if we must, it's not quite on brand, but I do have that CD, so.
How is it not on brand? To Become One, Anookitay.
Okay.
Clearly okay. Appropriate.
All right. Well, I'll see if I can find a version of it to use.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Cool.